Welcome to the Maria Heller Show. On the net since 2000 and still going strong. If you feel like you're not getting the real news, if you feel like you're not connected spiritually, you have found your home. Maria covers a wide range of topics as only a snarky New Yorker can. Straight up, no chaser. No censorship, no corporate sponsors, thus true freedom of speech. Your subscription gives you unlimited access as a member of the smartest audience on earth. Relax and enjoy the education. Now here's Maria.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. Today is the last day of April, which is the last day of Child Abuse Prevention Month and Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And I'm very happy to have a very special guest with me. He's very impressive. His name is Leon Walker Jr. He is a survivor and then grew up and became an advocate and a motivational speaker for children and adults that have suffered abuse. Today we're going to be talking from his book, Broken, The Survival Instincts of a Child. And I'll tell you what, this was quite a book to read. So I'm very happy to have Leon with me. Good morning, Leon.
Good morning, Maria. How are you today?
I'm doing okay. You know, this is a subject that doesn't get enough attention. We have children being abused, you know, from sea to shining sea in this country. We've got children in cages. We've got children, you know, drugged out. And in the town I live in, so many of my friends who are grandparents are raising their grandchildren because their children are in jail for drug abuse and worse.
That's right. Yeah, it's sad. Children in cages, children being abused, all of that is horrible.
I know, it's disgusting. But the other thing that I know you touch on when, in your teaching is when you look at, you know, I was thinking about this before the show this morning, and it brought up even more memories for me, about how many prominent men in our society have been accused of sexual assault. I mean, all the way from to the top to the bottom. And when I was rereading your press release this morning, I thought about it. And, you know, myself, I was sexually abused as a child. And by a family member, you know, not my immediate family, but a cousin. And then I thought even further, you know, my sister, when she was about 16, was walking through Brooklyn and she got attacked by a rapist. And she luckily for her, even though it was an all white neighborhood, it was a good section of Brooklyn. The only person that stopped and saved her was a black postman. Wow. And then I went from that thought to my mother, who wanted to be a singer. And back in the day, you know, my mother, we're talking about maybe it was 1945, okay? She was walking through Prospect Park on her way to the bandstand to try out for a singing gig. And she got attacked and almost raped. You know, her clothes were torn off, etc. And once again, it was a black man that stopped and saved her. And the only reason I'm saying that is when you look at the prison population in this country and you look at the racism in this country today, if it wasn't for these people, who knows what would have happened to my mother, my sister, and myself. Every time I got stuck on a highway or with a car, it was always a black person that stopped and helped me. So when people say to me, you know, Maria, you're a self-loathing white person. No, I'm not. Okay. I wasn't raised that way.
You know, understand, you know, it would be nice to hear those stories more often, but it's the stories we do hear is the other way around. You know, where black men are raping white women or beating up white guys. You never hear the good stories.
Well, you know, to this week, you know, some of the stories that went viral online, I don't know if you saw them or not, but one of the big ones was this, I think he was either 26 or 36, I can't remember, I think 26, a white bus driver who raped this 14-year-old girl, and all he got was probation.
How could they reduce it to such a, you know, minimum, you know, punishment? That's why people turn around and do the same thing over and over again.
Exactly. But, you know, when people say that white privilege doesn't exist in this country, they're not paying attention.
Well, they know that it does. They just don't want to. They just don't want to know that it could possibly stop one day.
Right, you know? Right. But you know, this morning I saw another disturbing thing. You know, and this is probably why I get banned on social media so often. But I posted this other meme: a 15-year-old honor roll student with no prior record steals sneakers. Of course, he's black. Tried as an adult and he got 5 years in prison for a pair of sneakers. And then in the same meme, a wealthy 79-year-old white man raped a 5-year-old girl and he got 90 days house arrest.
It just doesn't add up. Somebody, they're going to pay eventually, but it doesn't add up. You know, the first line of defense is not doing their job when it comes to that stuff. It's just crazy.
Well, then you go to, you know, the fact that I've said for, you know, my whole life that, you know, we only have a system of injustice in this country. And yeah, when you do look at what, you know, money talks and bullshit walks is what I was taught when I was a kid. You look at that guy, God, I don't follow sports, so I always forget the team, but that old rich guy in Florida that got busted at a prostitution house.
Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots.
Right. But you look at that, you look at the people paying to get their kids into college, you know, they're going to get, what, 30 days house arrest? And then what does a woman do when a judge lets a man walk from raping her or abusing her? And boys, too. What are you supposed to do? There's no justice.
There's no justice. A lot of times those women start to, they become serial killers, like the movie Monster. She was raped at 14, and then she became a prostitute. She started killing the guys who were paying for prostitutes.
Yeah, that was a very, very disturbing movie. It was very hard to me believe that was Charlene Duras. I was like, oh, my God. Yeah. But then you look at that other movie. God, I can't remember the name. Jesus. I watched it with my son, and we were both so disturbed we couldn't sleep. It was that really heavy black girl and her rape and her story.
Yeah, that was another one. I remember that one.
Right. And I mean, I watched that and I was sick to my stomach. You know, even when my sister recommends a show, even if it's supposedly a comedy that has a rape scene in it, I don't understand. I don't see the comedy in it. I can't watch anything like that.
No, it's hard. It's hard to watch stuff like that. It really is, because we know that it happens. We know that it's true. And then to see it happening and then see people turn their head when it happens, because I believe her mother had something to do with that. Then a lot of young ladies, I know a few young ladies that were raped by like stepfathers and fathers, and the mothers knew it. I made a post about that, and people act like this stuff doesn't happen. I'm like, it does happen, you know?
Well, the sad thing is a lot of times you find the mother turns a blind eye for whatever reason.
Yep.
Either she doesn't want to believe it, or she needs the man around to pay her bills, or whatever the situation is, or she's being molested herself. You know, when I talk to some of the survivors, some of these kids, they may have been, you know, severely beaten and raped by their natural fathers while their mother did nothing. And then what they do is they make their mother a saint in their mind. And I remind them that your mother was no saint. You know, she turned a blind eye. Her job was to protect you.
That's right.
So it's hard, you know, when you're a kid, you still want to love both your parents. You still want love from both your parents. But how do you come to a place where you can coexist and get your needs met if this is happening?
It's tough. It is really, really hard. But somebody has to stop the cycle, you know? And that's where you got to draw the line. But people just let it go forward. I mean, you know, a lot of women are, they say hurt people, but a lot of women have been hurt and they just like, you know, they give up, they quit.
Right.
And they don't break the cycle.
Well, somebody has to do it. I mean, you know, because you wrote your book, it's not like your life now truly is an open book. I do want to tell my listeners a little bit about what you experienced, and I'm sure you could always add to it. You were molested three times since you were 6 years old. You were addicted to pornography by 9 years old. You witnessed extremely violent fights in your family since you were born. And truthfully, it was an extremely toxic, dysfunctional family. How
Very
did
much.
You survive it?
Well, there was a lot of turning points in my life that helped me survive it. You know, I felt, aside from the being molested and raped and groped, I felt like a garbage kid. I felt like I was just thrown away and nobody cared. And so, sadly, with the being, you know, molested by my babysitter, she took me away from the pain and the hurt of my parents fighting and the arguing and the verbal abuse and mental abuse. I was looking for a way out. I was looking for somebody to protect me. I was looking for comfort. And, you know, her raping me was, of course it was wrong, but after that, it became casual sex, and it helped me mentally to get through the pain and agony of my everyday existence, living in a household that was full of hell.
Right.
But a turning point was when, you know, my dog would have puppies often. I would hear outside, you know, at 2-3 in the morning, like on a Tuesday or Wednesday before I go to school, and I would wake up, you know, and hear her hollering. I go outside, and I noticed that she was delivering her puppies. So I'm like, wow, this is pretty spooky and cool. It was dark out. You know, I was a kid that was afraid of dark, but when I had my mind set on doing something, I would do it. So I learned how to help my dog deliver puppies. One litter, she had 13 puppies, and that gave me comfort. I would help the puppies come out, and I would put them on the nipple so they can feed, and you know, so she can feed them. And I would go back in the house and get a blanket from the basement. I got in trouble for it, but I would keep her warm and keep the puppies clean. I would wipe them off and wash them down. So it made me feel like I had self-worth. It made me feel important. Mm-hmm. And that was a turning point in my life, because I couldn't deal with being in a house full of hell and arguing and fighting and being molested. It was just something that consumed me. I had to find a way out. And that was the first thing I found. And I said, well, maybe I'm not dumb. I'm not stupid. I'm not slow. You know, I might be one day be a doctor or a nurse or, you know, something that they can help deliver, an OBGYN. I had these thoughts running through my mind. And so that was a turning point. There was another turning point where my parents got divorced. My foundation was cracked and leaned and leaking. I had lost my morals. So she moved a man in, and I called him Chaz in the book. He's a gay man, but he was very confident in me. He taught me a lot about life. He helped me process my parents' divorce, because had I not had him in my life, I wouldn't be here now, because I had thoughts of suicide because of the divorce and because of I was being molested. But the turning point was Chaz moving into our house and teaching me about being a young man and about life and about my parents' divorce. I was 11 years old when I thought about suicide. God. So he helped me out. And the fact that, you know, I try to help my dog, I help her deliver puppies, it made me feel like a sense of, like I belonged. And, you know, animals get that love back to you. They don't judge you.
Of course.
So two turning points that really helped me out.
Right. Well, you were lucky, you know. But here's the other thing. When I talk to other people that have also been molested as a child, they tend to blame themselves because they say, well, maybe I did something to make that happen, or it felt good. And then they feel guilty because it felt good.
Well, you're right, Maria. The fact that two things went through my mind. The thought process was, why is she doing this to me? Did I give her an idea that I wanted this? You know, why did my parents leave me at home with her? And it happened. But like you said, after the first time was a mistake. I thought so. She knew it was wrong, but she was older than me and she knew better. But after that, I started to like it, Maria, and I did. And it gave me an outlet. It gave me something to look forward to. It wasn't just now that she's my babysitter, but then it became she's my sex partner. As young as I was, 8-9 years old, that's what I thought a babysitter was supposed to do.
Oh, God.
Because it was a good feeling.
Right. Well, I understand, you know, but, you know, a lot of times people will say, well, was I really molested because it felt good? Well, you know, masturbation starts in the crib, okay? So every human being knows what feels good, but there is a difference between what's right and wrong.
There's a big difference, a huge difference, and I couldn't determine it too, because I looked for the comfort, and I knew I could determine it too. I knew it was wrong, but how could it be wrong to me if it felt better than what my parents were going through in the household, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, I remember when I was about, I want to say maybe 7 years old, and my kid sister was about 5, and my sister was afraid of everything. She was just a fearful child. And my dad had this friend, this old man, who used to like to molest us, okay? He didn't rape us, but he used to like to feel us up. I don't know how else to say it. And
right.
I didn't like it. I didn't like him. And for some reason, I didn't tell my father until I saw when he was visiting one day that my sister was freezing on the spot. the thought that he was doing that to her, you know, and remember, I was only seven, made me, my instincts kicked in, and I went up to this man, and I pointed my finger in his face, and I said, if you ever touch me or my sister again, I'm telling my father.
Wow.
And he never did. Now, I got to tell you, Leon, I didn't tell my father about that until I was 30 years old.
I can believe it.
All right, I had an Italian father. I mean, my father would have killed that guy.
Yeah, he would have. I didn't start talking about mine until I was 50.
Well, there you go. Right. So I remember when I was telling my dad, he said, why didn't you tell me? I would have mowed him down. And I looked at my father and I said, that's why I didn't tell you. I needed my father more. I didn't want my father to go to jail. I already knew what my father would do.
Yeah, he would have mowed him down and he would have been out of your life. And then that man would have come by again, knowing that there's not a father figure in your house.
Exactly. So, you know, I waited till he was dead to tell my father. But my father was pissed, but I said to him, but I took care of it. Now, had the guy not heeded my warning, of course, I probably would have told my father.
Yeah, you gave him a chance.
But, you know, it wasn't just about protecting me, but it was also that fear I saw on my kid sister's face.
Right, big time. Yeah, but yeah, she froze.
Right. And you know, everybody's going to react to something, you know, in the moment. You don't know how you're going to react until it happens to you.
That's right. You have no idea. And in my case, I was shocked. I was like your sister. I was froze. But after that, I, like I say, sadly, Maria, I started to like it. And it was comforting to me. It was soothing to me. And it was actually fun. And that's not the right way to think about it, but that's the honest to God truth.
Well, of course. I mean, listen, we're animals. We're basically animals, okay? And humans have forgotten we're part of the animal kingdom on this earth. I think sometimes we're the dumbest animals.
But those are
natural physical reactions. You don't know as a kid that this is not acceptable. You know, I mean,
right.
when you have cardinals with the Catholic Church saying that they didn't know having sex with children was against the law. I mean, it's pretty disgusting what's going on.
Disgusting. And it happens often. It just keeps happening. And even when you see these guys do it and how embarrassed they look on TV and how they, you know, they embarrass the congregation, their family, and they go to jail, you would think that would be enough to stop people from doing it, but it's not enough.
No, it isn't. And then they come out and they get their parish back. That's even more crazy. Yeah,
they sure do.
So, you know what, today, you know, people need to re-examine what the word Christian means to them. Because this is to me, you know, assaulting a child, it to me is like stealing that child's soul. That's one of the most unforgivable crimes.
You take their soul, you take their innocence, and you take their virginity all in one. It could be at one time. Mm-hmm. And that kid winds up being unhealthy mentally, bitter, angry, they become disrespectful, and they sometimes, and most more times than not, they start doing the same thing that was done to them later on in life. That's why you have these serial killers and serial rapists.
Well, it's because it's all they know. Right, it's all they know. So to them, that's normal.
It's normal.
Right, and I mean, right. I've worked with a lot of people, you know, where you literally have to learn how to break the pattern in your family. And they've done it.
And it's still.
Yeah,
you still have to learn. Yeah,
exactly. But you know, through all the hell that you went through, I do want my listeners to know, Leon went through hell in his life. If you read the book Broken, you'll understand the hell he went through. But you turned your life around, and you are a 32-year decorated Navy veteran with more than 11 deployments to the Persian Gulf. You've been a Navy instructor, recruiter, company commander. I mean, you literally did win a lot of awards, accolades, and now you're giving back. I mean, this is a success story, no matter what.
Thank you. Yeah, I am giving back, Gloria. I mean, it's in my heart to do it. I never wanted to write a book, but a friend heard my story and we were talking. He wanted to interview me to help him out with some young kids. And he said, hey, can I talk to you? I'm like, sure, can we talk? And after about 5 minutes, he said, man, that's a lot. You know, are you okay? I said, yeah. And he said 7 words to me. He said, why don't you just write a book? I never wanted to write a book, Maria. I never wanted to put myself out there like that. But I did a little bit throughout the Navy as a leader, and I would tell people a little bit about my story just to inspire them and get them back on track to help them out and let them know, hey, you can recover because I did.
Right.
So that's how it all started.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of people think that they're alone in this, that they're the only one it happens to, which is a reason for any support group on any level, whether it's AA, NA, whatever. Everybody needs a support group because you're not alone in this.
That's right. Not alone at all, you know, and that's what people think, that they become embarrassed to tell a story or to talk to somebody about it because they think they're by themselves. But it's a lot of people that have gone through what I've gone through, yet I just chose to tell my story. I'm not afraid to tell my story because I'm not living that life anymore, and I want to help other people live their lives and get through these mental obstacles that they have.
Exactly. Well, you know, writing your book, somebody's going to pick it up and they're going to identify with it. They're going to say, oh, it wasn't just me. So it takes a lot of courage to do what you do, but it's also really giving from your soul, not even just your heart, to be able to expose what you expose in your work. And I want you to know, I remembered the name of that movie while we were talking. It was Precious.
Precious, that's it. That's exactly what it is, yeah.
I mean, that was one of the hardest films I ever watched as a woman.
It was tough. It was tough to watch her mother say the things to her, and it was horrible. I'm like,
My son and I were both crying watching it. It was one of those movies where you want to hug your children after you see it.
Yeah, it's a very disturbing book, but you know what? It's what happens in life. It's true stuff, and people avoid it, and it still happens. Even with as disturbing as that book was, it still goes on. Probably that day or shortly after, it happened to another young lady.
Right. Well, you know, one of the other things you talk about in your book, and it's something that I've talked to people about, and they've also shared it with me. When you're sexually abused as a child, even if you go for counseling, and a lot of them do, when they get into a sexual relationship or they're married, they get flashbacks, and it ruins them having a healthy sexual relationship with their partner. I mean, some of them tell me they actually can curl up into a fetal position for hours.
Yeah, it comes back mentally. You have triggers, whether it's your husband touching you or your wife touching you. It could feel the way that the perpetrator touched you. It could be the way the perpetrator looked at you. It could be the room that you're in. It could be a certain smell of cologne. It could be a word. It could be his or her voice. They're all triggers that will make you go back into that child that was molested.
Mm-hmm.
I went through that.
Right. So how do you get past it? What do you do?
Well, so what I did was first I had to identify it. I had to tell myself, you know, this did happen and it was wrong. And I told myself, if you don't fix this, you could possibly carry this forward and do it to other people, which I didn't want to touch anybody like that inappropriately. I didn't want to rape anybody. I didn't want to molest anybody. I knew that was wrong. So I said, you know, for me to stop thinking these things that were done to me, I had to first take myself away from the environment, the product I was thinking about, which is the porn. I just stopped watching. I was addicted to that. I had to break the cycle myself. I didn't have an adult to break the cycle for me. I had nobody holding my hand. Mm. You know, I wanted to be somebody better in life, and I don't want to hurt anybody. I was already hurt, and I knew how I felt to hurt a little child. And I knew it as I got older, I'm like, this stuff is still inside me. I don't want this to, I don't want to see anybody else go through this. So I had to delve into, luckily, I got into the military, which was very, very good for me. It was an integral part of my life. It turned me around.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but, you know, the military has its demons as well. And it's got a way of making you relive what you did you went through in your childhood, whether it be alcohol, porn, women, sex, you know. So I was still surrounded by those things, but I had to make myself stronger. I could have succumbed to the devil at any moment. I didn't want to do that, though. You know, I'm not a Bible thumper or anything like that. I'm not biblical, but I'm spiritual, and I believe that, you know, I believe in God. And there was a lot of things I said, you know, I can't do these things to people. I can't hurt people.
Right.
Although I did become verbally abusive to people, to the women. You know, I became mentally abusive to women, but that's as far as it's gotten. But I used to think that at least I'm not hitting them, you know, I'm talking to them bad, but I'm not hitting them. But that verbal abuse was just as bad.
Right.
So there were some things and traits I carried forward aside from, you know, me being raped and molested. I didn't do those things to people, but I was, because I was raped and molested and fondled by a male member, I was still upset with that for a long time. I never got any help.
Right.
Never got any therapy. Mm. So I wanted, you know, being in the military, I didn't want to go in there and embarrass myself and embarrass my family. So I wanted to be a upstanding citizen and a proud American serving my country. And so that's what helped me out by,
right,
you know, wanting to be a better person.
Right. Well, you know, that's another topic that I have covered and interviewed women about, is the amount of rape, and sometimes they get murdered, the women in the service, you know, by their own people. You know, I remember that one story from a couple of years ago about that black woman that was gang raped, and they set her body on fire, you know, and her family still hasn't gotten any justice out of that.
Horrible.
So, you know, it's just that it's a situation that seems to be so pervasive. It kind of makes you wonder, you know, where did it all start? I mean, where did it go so out of whack? And then you get somebody like Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court. I believed Dr. Christie, you know, her story was... If you're a woman, her story's very believable, because I don't know very few women that I know that haven't been molested in one way or another.
Right.
If there's no justice, like this rape I talked to you about earlier in the show, what's a woman to do? You know,
that's right. And that's why you have women nowadays that are so upset, and they become very dominant in the workplace, they become dominant at home, because they refuse to put anything in the hands of the law, because they know that nine times out of ten, nobody's going to believe them. They check for the chance, you know, they're gold diggers, they want to bring men down. You know, my mother was raped by a Major League Baseball player. She told me the story. And nothing ever happened to her. She said, you know, my nickname was Double. She said, Double, I didn't tell anybody because no one would have believed me. Who am I? I'm just a regular woman in Cleveland, and
right,
he's a Major League Baseball player. So they wouldn't have believed her, just like that still goes on today. And this was in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. You see how many sports stars get accused of that, and nothing happens to them. You know, they still make their billions of dollars every year.
That's right.
You know, listen, I don't know how old you are. I'm going to assume that you're not a teenager, because you are. I think your bio said you're a grandfather.
I'm godfather. I'm 53. I have three godchildren.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I was trying to keep track of all that. But, you know, when you look at, you know, this week I had another news story. It was since, I think, 1945 to 2016. 12,000 boys were sexually abused in the Boy Scouts.
Wow.
Okay, so here's a secret they've kept for, you know, 60, 70 years. You know, all the people you're supposed to trust. You know, when I was a kid, they told you if you got lost or something bad happened on the street, look for a cop. And in those days, the cop would actually help you. Today, that would be the last thing I would do. Because
that's
how many
right.
cops get busted for raping women or propositioning women instead of arresting them?
Or even beating people. You know, and they say 90% of the people that are perpetrators of rape or molestation are people that you know and or trust. 80% of the cases won't even be reported.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, look at how many people are supposed to trust their priest. Okay.
There you go.
And you're putting your kid in the Boy Scouts. You think the Boy Scouts, you know, we buy the hype, but 12,000 kids were molested. So, you know, people think it's not just women. Boys get raped too.
That's right. They do. They do. But then a lot of boys, we're so masculine and macho, we don't talk about it. It's like we're embarrassed to say, hey, why did you say that girl raped you? What's wrong with you, man? That was pretty cool. But that's how we look at it. That's a perception.
Well, yeah, they make jokes about it. Oh, yeah, I remember some of the guys I used to hang out with, like in Brooklyn, and their answer would be, you can't rape the willing.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
You know, and try to make a joke out of it. But, you know, the reason I asked how old you were, you know, back in my day, John Lennon came out with a song, and the last time I interviewed a black woman on my show, she was obviously very young and never heard of it, so she was kind of shocked. I think she was with the group Trust Women. John had come out with a song in the late 60s called Woman is the Nigger of the World. And even though, you know, I was still like, you know, under 20 years old at that point, I remember thinking to myself, where does that leave the black woman?
Yeah, that's right. Helpless.
Yeah. And I mean, when you look at the injustice on so many levels, and I didn't intend to make this show about blacks versus whites or black issues. It just seems to be happening. So I'm going with it. But when you look at, you know, even prison sentences, the one story that really pisses me off that's going on now is these white women who brought their kids into college. And listen, Felicity Huffman's one of my favorite actresses, but I'm so disappointed in her. These people are going to get away. You and I know it. They're going to get away with a slap on their hand. When a year or so ago, I had this story of a black mom. I forget what city it was in. But she chose to lie and put her kid in a better school district because the district she lived in had shit schools. Okay, a lot of people do that. That woman is serving 5 years in jail for that.
Wow, that's horrible. Unfair.
I know. So if she gets 5 years for that, for putting her kid in the wrong district school, you know these people are going to walk away. The millionaires, whether they're black, white, or indifferent, okay? If you've got money, there's a different set of laws in this country.
It's a different set of laws if you got money, you're right. And I truly believe that this is not an isolated incident. It's been going on for a long time. I don't know why or how this got reported, but it's not the first time.
No, of course not. It's just really sickening. Now, I was reading in your bio that you also became a youth football coach. You're a mentorship of a program developer, but also that you manage a suicide prevention program. What was that like for you, being that you wanted to commit suicide when you were 11?
Well, that's a great question, Maria, because I would sit in those meetings and hear some of the scenarios, and some of the scenarios I would hear were some of the same words I said when I was 8 or 9 years old, and nobody knew. While I was sitting in that meeting, I would squirm in my chair like, man, these are people now that are still thinking like I was thinking when I was 8, 9 years old. Huh. You know, here I am on this committee with, you know, nobody knowing that I had two attempts at suicide. Nobody even asked me. They just assumed because I'm a senior leader in the Navy and I have a smile on my face that I've never been through those things. They gather the community, a group of people together to talk about this. And me being one of the panel members and the senior guy, I had to hold back a lot, but it was easy for me to say, hey, look, I had to step up one day and say, look, I understand why this young man or woman wants to commit suicide. Mm. I understand why these people are talking about suicide. I understand what they're going through because they never dealt with the issues, and I never dealt with the issues, but thank God I was not that they were mentally weak, but I was just a mentally strong kid. I had been through a lot, and so I was comfortable with being uncomfortable, so it was easy for me to just go through life and plow through things as a senior person, or even as a naval sailor, because I had a reputation to uphold, I had a career to keep in check. Because in the military, when you tell people you're going to commit suicide, it's called suicide ideation. They start, they make a report about it, they send you to the hospital, and then you're labeled. People don't know that, but then you're labeled.
Right, exactly.
And I don't want to be labeled.
Right. Yeah, and so, sometimes they just want to Baker Act you too.
Right. That's it.
So, and that's not the solution.
I'm sitting at those meetings, and I just said, let me speak up. So I told him, I said, hey, I understand. They said, well, why do you understand? I said, because I went through it. I was one of these kids. And then everybody got quiet.
Right. Like,
you? Yeah, me. You know? So, they think just because you have a smile on your face and you're being very successful in the military that you didn't have these issues as well. But I did.
Exactly. Listen, Leon, we need to take a short break. So, audience, stay with us. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Maria. I don't often get to talk directly to the listeners here on the Gary Noll Network, but I felt like doing that today. I know a lot of you really enjoy my show, but you might not know that I do 4 shows a week over at my website, maria.net. So if you're loving the show you get to hear on Sunday, come on over to my site and subscribe, because I've got hundreds of hours of great shows on pretty much every topic in the universe. And that, again, is maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. And now we can get back to this excellent show. Thanks.
World got you down? Feel like you're lost? Don't know the best direction for your life, whether it's love, money, or purpose? A session with Maria can help you get the clarity you need and the direction you need to live your best life possible. Maria's been doing this professionally for almost 40 years. Why not get the help you need by scheduling a session with Maria today? Check out the link for private consultations with Maria. You'll be glad you did. Subscribers to her show get a $50 discount on either a 15-minute or half-hour session with Maria. Book now. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the show. I'm speaking with Leon Walker Jr. on his book, Broken, The Survival Instincts of a Child. And I'm sure a lot of you out there are sitting there. We might be tripping some of your triggers. I know for myself, I don't know about you, Leon, but I was very fortunate to fall into John Bradshaw when he was still alive. And John Bradshaw was one of the best people to work with and to read, especially his book Family Secrets, to help people heal or heal their inner child, et cetera, et cetera. But here you were, you said you were what, 11 years old when your parents got divorced?
Yeah, and that was the first thought was suicide, right?
Okay, but you never had those thoughts while you were being molested and everybody was going crazy around you, beating each other. I mean, there were a couple of shootings around you, all this crazy stuff. But it was your parents' divorce that made you consider suicide?
Yeah, it was the divorce, the proceedings. My father left. We didn't have food. We were borrowing food from the neighbors. We were borrowing electricity from the neighbors. We were borrowing water. We didn't have a phone. The dogs didn't have any food. So it was just an abundance of things, that a culmination of things that made me say, you know what? I don't need this type of stuff in my life. I can't handle it. I'm checking out. And, you know, the first attempt was me wanting to jump out the window of our bathroom, but I saw my neighbor, and this is my book, Broken. I saw my neighbor sitting on the porch, and she looked up at me, and I kind of like eased my way back into the window because I was done. I was over. I was tired of coming home from... I was playing football as a young kid, a Pee Wee League, and I come home and the lights are dark and we didn't have any, you know, no heat. We had the, you know, extension cord from the neighbor's house to our house to get us electricity to warm up the water. We didn't have water. We had to borrow water from across the street just for me to take not even a bath, but a stand-up shower out of a pot. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just too much for me. And then I'm coming home from football practice. Not only am I dirty, but I got to go to school the next day. I'm hungry. You know, and I got tired of talking to my siblings in the dark. It was just too much, and I didn't think my father was ever coming back. I didn't know where he was. He moved on the other side of town, you know, and I just didn't want to live there anymore. I just didn't want to be around. I just didn't want to stay anymore. I didn't want to wallow in that pain. You know, I had no outlet aside from texting my babysitter. That was my only outlet, but when she left and we stopped, I had more time to concentrate on the bad things in my house, and so I was just tired of it.
Yeah,
and, the other time my attempt was, my mother had a gun in a drawer in the bedroom. I knew where it was. And this was the same gun she used to try to kill my father. She shot at him 6 times when he came into her job. And so the one day I said, you know what, I'm done. This is the second attempt. I said, I just can't do it. And I put the gun in my mouth. And the only reason why I didn't pull the trigger is because it was nasty. I felt the steel in my mouth. It was cold. I tasted the gunpowder from the time she had shot at my father. And I put it down real quick. The nasty taste scared me. It shot me. And I just didn't have the time. I didn't have the gut to pull the trigger. And, you know, so that was just the second incident. And I just had enough. I didn't see a light at the end of the tunnel. I didn't think I would ever recover.
Right. So let me ask you this, you know, because a lot of times, you know, people make me laugh. They have their own interpretation of who Maria Heller is. You know, and they think that, you know, I was born and raised, you know, just the way I am. My life is what it is this minute. But they have no idea that all the things that I survived, all the things I experienced, made me who I am.
Right.
That happened to you too.
Sure did.
When you look at your life now, and I know they were hard lessons, without question of a doubt, would you have picked any other life based on who you are today?
No, if I had to do it all over again, Maria, I would do it the same way. Thank God I didn't kill myself the 2 attempts. It made me a very mentally strong young man. It made me very resilient. It made me appreciate life more than anything in this world, because I knew I had to have some goodness coming down the road. There's no way a child should have to go through so much, you know, at from 5 years old to first grade up to sixth grade and not have a good life later on. So I knew, I said, no, this is it can't be like this for the rest of my life.
Yeah, but
you're on track, Lord. I'm staying on track.
Right.
So I knew that one day it would change. It was just overbearing, and I just knew that I couldn't live like this for the rest of my life. There had to be something good coming out of it.
Right. Well, you worked hard. You worked hard to make a change. But what was interesting is towards the end of your book, you basically show that you really love your parents. And to be able to turn around and love people that provided such a horrific world for you to live in takes a lot. But it also takes a lot of maturity, you know, and I try to tell this to people all the time. The people that treat you the worst are usually your best teachers.
I had a very abusive
relationship. But I was very lucky that it was my first relationship, and it was abusive in every which way, Leon. It took me about 25 years in order for me to realize that he was one of my best teachers. Because had I not gotten something like that right out of the gate, who knows what kind of crap I would have taken the rest of my life.
Yeah, and who knows how, if you would have been able to handle it too. So that's what made me... You know, it was kind of like weird that when people were talking to me about their life, I'm like not kind of blow them off, but I'm like, okay, well, here's mine. They're like, wow. So I try to make them think that, you know, your life is bad, but there's other people's life, people out here that have a life much worse than yours. I wasn't taking anything away from them, but in a way I was comparing, I'm like, yeah, mine was worse than yours. So what's your excuse for wanting to give up in life? Don't ever give up. That was the parallel I tried to give them.
Well, you Lord know, so knows you didn't give up. I mean... That one test you had to take to get where you were going, I'm trying to look for what that was. That was your Armed Services Vocational Aptitude and Battery Test. You took that five times.
I took it five times, and I was I failed it four times. And my uncles and my father were in the Army. My cousin was in the Army, and that's why I wound up joining the military. I knew I was going to join the military at 8, 9 years old. Because my uncle would come home, my cousin would come home from the Army, and he just looked so good in uniform. He just looked so majestic, and I liked the way that people looked at him. They hugged him, they shook his hand, and they respected him.
Well,
so,
you know,
that was my reason for joining the military, one of the reasons.
Right.
You know, yeah, I did take the test five times.
Well, you know, I've seen so many movies about, you know, especially blacks in America. You know, Biloxi Blues comes to mind, okay, even though it was a comedy. But I've seen so many times where, for black Americans especially, it's the first place where they know they're going to have shoes on their feet and three meals a day and a place to sleep. What has, you know, you talk about the negative stereotypes of blacks in this country, and you talk about it, you know, from your perspective in the 1970s. What do you see has changed from the 1970s to now on the stereotypes?
Well, actually, what I've seen change is the fact that it's actually getting a little worse, because the stereotypes that we were given, the stamp that we were given years ago, kids nowadays are showing proof of it. They're living it. You know, that we're very impressionable people. We're very we can be easily influenced with alcohol, jewelry, big gaudy cars with rims on them,
right,
and big houses. We can be angry because of slavery. When some people call you a black person nigger, the first thing they want to do is beat them up or fight. You know, sometimes, you know, these kids, they don't show that education is important yet. Don't get me wrong, blacks are going to college, but you have a lot of kids that are not going to college. You have a lot of kids that are just lazy and they're okay with it. So the stereotypes, I think, are getting worse, because we see that these kids nowadays are not trying to do anything, any better. They want a handout. You know, they have that, they talk about blacks always wanting handouts, wanting restitution, and these kids are proving that to be true.
Well, I got to tell you, though, I got to tell you, Leah, my white friends complain about their kids being the same way. You know,
yeah, I can believe that. I've seen it.
They have no respect or understanding of money. They don't even know what real money is. Everything's digital. They think a credit card is limitless. I mean, and then they don't want to work. They want to get paid to, you know, stand around and look good.
Yeah, social media has done that. And you know, look at it, the work ethic. They don't have the work ethic that they should have, because you can sit at home on a computer and make a video and they get a lot of views. You get paid for that. You know, so they say, well, why should I get up and work a 9-to-5 at Walmart or the gas station? Why can I sit on my computer and get paid more in 1 hour than I'll get paid in 8 hours?
Right, right. Well, you know, you talk about, and listen, sometimes the truth hurts, okay? And I just need to put that out there for people that may, you know, agree or disagree with what we're talking about. But, you know, you talked about black families living in East Cleveland in the 1970s. You said they came from nothing. They lived in dysfunctional households with divorce, murder, lack of standards, lack of organization, lack of morals, no insight, no guidance, no direction, and no caring, and people got stuck. And then they become a product of their environment. And, you know, right. One of the biggest issues in this country has always been inequality.
Yeah.
And then when you look at, you know, the prison system, it's just another form of black slavery. You know, you look at the inordinate amount of black people in jail from just the few stories I told in the beginning of this show. You know, steal a pair of sneakers, get 5 years if you're black. You know, rape a 5-year-old kid and get 30 days house probation if you're white. And that may hurt some people's feelings, but it's just the truth. You know, I've been covering this stuff for decades. So, you know, when I look at, you know, people like that, I, you know, and in my town, we have a lot of poor people too, and poor whites. And I look at them and they have so many children, and you could see the parents are of low intelligence. I can just tell. And I look at those babies and in my mind, I say they're born against it and there's no way out for them. It's not like in my day, you know, in the 1950s where you had the American dream in front of you. You could dig your way out of a ghetto, which I did. But that's not available anymore.
No, it's not available, Maria. But I will tell you this. You can make them available. You know, I truly believe that. Not because I joined the military, but I have a nice life now. I have a nice life my entire time in the military. That's why sometimes it's hard for me to listen to these black people, my black people, and say, you know what, oh, I feel bad for you. Which I'm not going to say I don't, but I'm like, look, I had a chance. I had an opportunity, the same chance, opportunity that you had. And some of these people that are complaining, they've never been raped or molested or followed. They never come from a dysfunctional household. They didn't lose their home. They weren't homeless. They weren't headed to a foster care. They didn't see their mother get her face bashed in or her teeth knocked out. But I made a way. I could be just like these people sitting home on the couch on welfare, wanting food stamps and restitution. But I chose not to do that. Mm-hmm. I had serious work ethic embedded in me. Serious work ethic and morals. Although my foundation, my moral foundation, my moral clock was off. It was broken and cracked as a child. But I got back on track. I recovered.
Well, you were
able to go into the military.
Right. But you were also obviously a very strong soul to be able to survive what you went through.
I was.
You know, you got to think about how many, God knows, how many hundreds of thousands don't survive. You know, I'm sure you heard, you know, quite the stories from that suicide program that you were working.
Maria, it was disheartening. It was horrible. It was sad. And I'm thinking, like, how did I make it out? You know, like you said, I had a strong soul. I had a strong mind. But some people don't have that.
Well,
you know, some
people
are given a lot, and they just don't know what it's like to struggle. And then when they do struggle, they can't understand it. They can't deal with it. So the first thing they do, like I was trying to do, was commit suicide. And I was, you know, unsuccessful, thank God. But some people are successful at doing it.
Right.
That's the easy way out.
Well, yeah, either that or, you know, they turn to drugs or alcohol, which was also around you as a kid. You know, and you got a lot of kids, like I told you, you know, a lot of my friends are raising their grandchildren because their parents are all in jail or strung out on drugs.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult for a child to feel that self-worth. You know, does anybody care? So I always try to make it a point to smile at these children that I see, you know, with their parents that I can read like an open book. And I try to, you know, I always go up to the parent and say, oh, you're so blessed to have such a beautiful child. Because I know that they're either abusing that kid or they're upset that they even have that child.
That's right. And a lot of times they are upset that they even have their child. That's right. You're exactly right. And when you tell them that they're blessed to have a child, you're telling them the right thing, because maybe it'll make them think, and maybe it'll make them, you know, appreciate a child even more. But
exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
Exactly.
Some of them don't even want children.
Exactly. So let me ask you a question, just going back to your own sexual abuse. Because it's a question, you know, a lot of people ask. I mean, my father asked me, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell your parents what was happening to you?
Oh, there's a couple of reasons. My parents had a lot of hell going on in their house, in our household. And, you know, when a child thinks about telling their parents that they're being raped or molested, first thing, trust me when I tell this, first thing that comes in their mind is that, I don't want to get in trouble, you know, or I don't want to cause issues in the family, you know. That's what these children think. That's what I thought. And then the other reason why I didn't tell them, to because I didn't want it to stop. Mm. It was a way, it made me feel good. It filled my heart. It took me, my mindset out of that hellhole I was in. It made me feel wanted. It made me feel confident. It gave me comfort. You know, it made me feel like somebody really loved me. I know my parents loved me, but they never told me. They showed me with food and clothes and trips. But when she, you know, when we were having sex, I just didn't want it to stop because it felt good to me, not just like the intercourse part, but I felt like I was a person. I felt like somebody really liked me.
It was an escape.
True.
You know,
yeah,
a lot of people will, you know, yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people that disassociated when they were being assaulted. And
yeah,
for a lot of them, they don't even have those memories that they were assaulted, because it's like their soul just left their body during that. And a lot of them don't even come to realization of what happened until they're much older.
Like me. I mean, I knew it all along, but I didn't start talking about it until I was 50 and going through therapy for other things in my life. And I started talking about it. I'm like, wow, this is why I was verbally abusive. This is why I didn't want to commit. This is why I was afraid of abandonment, because I lost my mother 3 times. When we lost the house, when she started doing crack, and then when she died. And so, you know, so that was my reason right there. I'm like, you know what? I was afraid to commit to women in relationships. I was afraid to tell them I love them. I didn't know how to show love. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to say it. All
right.
I knew was to entertain and buy her, you know, clothes and take her out for dinner and stuff like that, and get her hair and nails done. That's all I knew. I couldn't say I loved you because I didn't know I didn't know how to feel when I said I loved you. I didn't know if I was telling the truth.
Right. Well, you know, my last husband came from an extremely abusive family. I think his stories might actually top yours. And his mother, of course, failed them, in my opinion, because she didn't protect her children. She was part and parcel as far as I was concerned. And I remember one day when she came to visit, which I've never left my children alone with her. My son was maybe about 5 years old, and he was cute as shit. He still is. And I'm all kissing him up, you know. Listen, Italian women, I kissed his face so much, it was a wonder that he still had skin on it. And she was sitting there, and she watched that, and she said to me, I never kissed my kids like that. And I looked at her, and I said, yeah, I know. Because I could see how that affected my husband and his lack of being able to be affectionate to, you know, somebody that was emotionally absent to our own children.
Emotionally absent, yeah, it can't be affectionate. And I was one of those guys, one of those kids. I was one of those young men. I was one of those adults.
Right. So, I mean, it affects people in ways that they, you know, they don't even realize. And some people never deal. They never deal with their issues. And some will wake up and will make that, you know, will make that brave trip to get some help. So, you know, we only have a couple of minutes left. If you were talking right now to your younger self, which I'm sure you meet on a daily basis, people like yourself that went through it, what advice would you give them?
Well, first of all, I would give them, if there's anything that ever happened to you as a child, if you're touched, if you're raped or molested, do not hold it in, because you're going to need help with that. You're going to have to process it. And if not, you're going to start doing that to other people. Unfortunately, I didn't do that to other people, but there's ways that you affect and harm other people based on what happened to you, which was I become verbally abusive. I became mentally abusive. Mm-hmm. I became overly aggressive. I was angry. I didn't like being in a relationship. I didn't want to be held. I didn't want to be hugged. I didn't want to be loved. So I would tell you to get help and talk. If you got to talk to the principal, the police officer, firefighter, you have to tell somebody because it's going to, they're going to find help for you. You have to get help. And another thing I highly recommend to these young men and women out here is, you know, don't believe the negative things that people are telling you. When people told me I was dumb, stupid, and slow, I believed it. And so I started acting dumb, stupid, and slow. I didn't want to pay attention to school. I didn't want to go to school because I didn't have the ability to learn.
Right.
It all changed for me when I started telling myself positive things. Even if it's something you think that maybe, you know, you cannot possibly do, just tell yourself and try. You'd be surprised what you can do. And once you do something that you thought that was extreme or unreachable and you do it, that builds your self-confidence. That builds your self-esteem. So stop believing what the negative things that people are telling you. I don't care who it is.
Right.
Don't listen to it. Tell yourself positive things and believe those positive things and make sure you have a relationship with God. That's very important. I'm not biblical. I don't even go to church, but I have a great relationship with God, and that's who I believe in. That's who keeps me going.
Well, and you also have come to believe in yourself.
That's right, 100%. I believe in myself, and when other people see that you believe in yourself and you're willing to help them believe in themselves, you can do that. It'll work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, it used to be an old song from some musical, accentuate the positive.
That's right.
And, you know, listen, I tell people all the time, if you've got people around you that don't support who you are, you need to get them out of your life.
Out of your life. They're called energy vampires. They
right.
come in all shapes and sizes and ages.
Absolutely. Well, Leon, I do want to thank you so much for joining me today and for writing your story, because I think it's going to help a whole lot of people.
I sure hope so, Maria. And, that's my goal, that's my reason, and that's my purpose in life, to help other people.
Well, I think you survived just to do what it is you're doing today.
Yeah, I sure did. I had to be strong. I'm still strong. I'm even stronger now.
Good for you. Well, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Ray. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed the conversation.
Same here. Take good care now.
All right. You
Bye.
Too. Bye-bye.
Whew, that was a hard one, huh? But hey, somebody's got to say these things because this is the world we live in. And like I said, and he agrees, if you got negative people in your life, why are they there? You're either with me or against me. Anyway, thanks for listening to the show. Again, the name of his book is Broken, The Survival Instincts of a Child. And it's quite the book to read. And again, thanks for supporting the show, and I'll see you guys on Thursday.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.